This is the Talking Split Podcast.
Welcome, coaches, to the Talking Split Podcast. I am Rob Calder, the Coach Development Officer at Basketball Victoria, joined ably, as always, by the new barbecue roasting queen. To my right, Zoe Carr, who has purchased the Weber and is now trying to harden my arteries like there is no tomorrow. Welcome, Zoe.
Thank you for having me. We can make this quick. I've got a brisket going on there. I need to check it and baste it.
Excellent. And of course, from downtown quarantine, the man that has probably single-handedly clocked TikTok at this point whilst on day 8 of quarantine, the newly appointed assistant coach at the Basketball Australia Centre of Excellence, Ash Arnott. Welcome, Ash.
Thank you, Robbie. I've been well behaved on the socials. I've just been working in here, as you can imagine. Hard at work, no social media, and just watching DVDs.
There's no one that believes that.
I've been very well behaved. Very well behaved.
So you made the trek up last week for your new role up there. How's it all been going?
Yeah, it's going well. It was an easy drive. Mother was a bit sad to say goodbye. Brother was absolutely over the moon. Couldn't wait for me to leave. Easy drive up here. I'm in day 8 of quarantine right now. As you can imagine, it can be boring at some times, but just like we tell the kids, and I've become a bit of a pro, obviously, from Melbourne being in the lockdown. So just keeping a routine and trying to stay busy. Can't do anything for too long. I lose my attention span, but other than that, cruising through right now, just trying to find different workouts, mate. You can only do so much push-ups. I'm starting to get a bit sore.
Yeah, I'd take one push-up at this point. It's there's not a whole lot of workouts going on here, to be fair to say. But what does the new role entail with you up there?
Yeah, so lucky enough to accept the new role as an assistant coach. Obviously, I'll be working on the Centre of Excellence side and assisting Robbie McKinley, who was appointed as the new head coach. And as many people would know, we work alongside the NBA Global, and Marty Clark leads up that team with Nate Brereton as their assistant coach. And Nate was in the COE role. So when Robbie shifted over, Nate accepted that new role into the NBA Global, which obviously gave me an opportunity to slip into that role. So that's kind of how it happened. In terms of what it looks like for me, still not sure, just still early on. So obviously very eager and excited to get started. Definitely going to miss my kids here at Bass Victoria and the team as in the high performance team and the hub coaches. We've established really good relationships over the last couple of years, even though a lot of them had some mean things to say on the way out. I'm going to miss them a lot. And luckily for me, though, I'm still in the family. I'm still in the family tree, and we're going to be connecting still over this journey. So excited for that, and I'll be back and forth over my time. Hopefully it's hopefully I'm not back too soon, mate. Hopefully they don't fire me and kick me back and Robbie gets sick of me. But I'm really excited and just can't thank BV and the people involved, that I guess the basketball community down in Melbourne for everything they've done for me, because without their support, I guess this opportunity would never have occurred. So thank you to everyone out there.
And probably the most exciting part is actually being able to get on court and coach some kids for the first time in a while.
Yeah, it's going to be a weird feeling, Robbie. I'll probably tuck it out after the first session because I haven't been able to do it. I'm preparing myself. I've been running on the spot trying to make sure that when I get back onto the court, I've got that energy and I'm active. And I'm just going back to a full day's work. I think it's going to be a bit of a hit to my system. But, yeah, getting back on court, it will be exciting. Obviously, Canberra's here in a lockdown. So I'm going to be still familiar with the surroundings to begin with. But, yeah, really excited to get on court.
But just screaming at yourself in the mirror, just trying to get the voice box going again, because we know that no kid will go unpunished if you get the opportunity to scream at someone.
Yeah, I'm pretty calm, cool, collective on court, so I don't think I'll have to work too hard on the vocals. I don't tend to raise my voice too much. There's probably hundreds of kids out there going, that's a load of nonsense, Ash, but... we'll see. We'll give it a week. I'm sure the vocal cords at the end of that week will be a little bit strained, but we'll pick up from there.
Sounds very good. Well, obviously, we wish you all the best of luck, and thanks for everything you've done in this, and we'll talk about this at the end of the podcast as well, it's a little bit of an Ash farewell, but it's been great working with you, and we do appreciate that you're now technically working for Basketball Australia, but jumping on the BV podcast in your BA time, which, you know, I'm sure no one at BA listens to that.
So. I was going to actually send the invoice later, Robbie, so yep. I appreciate you bringing that up. So I'll just email that to you. Normal one, rob.coulter.
I believe the spelling isn't necessarily how it sounds. I believe it's grant.wallace@basketballvictoria.com.au. Like it's how it's spelt anyway. So
just making that note.
Appreciate that. So as we've spoken about a little bit over the past couple of podcasts as well, this is a mailbag. So we did have a number of coaches send in some questions for us, which has been fantastic. So we've split this up into two parts. So we'll punch through the first 10 or so questions this week, and we'll grab Jenny and Coots for next week's podcast and get through the other part of the mailbag this week. So we do appreciate everyone that's jumped in on support. My email blew up, which was fantastic, and we'll try and get through as many as we possibly can with as many different opinions and all that sort of stuff as well. We don't necessarily need to all agree on the same thing. We can come at it from different angles if you feel like you do agree with what's being said, but it's a little bit boring and you feel like being a touch controversial, feel free. And you can just go ad hoc and do what you want to do from there. But first question we do have sent in, tryouts this year. So you guys can probably talk about it a little bit from an SDP type perspective, because you're going to be going through trials, we hope. Ash, not so much, but you're very much across this anyway. I'm happy to talk about the VJBL side of things as well. How would you be approaching trials this year when selecting athletes for your programs? Ash, kick us off. What would you be looking at first?
Well, firstly, just skills. Who's come back from, obviously, all our lockdowns? Most coaches would have gone through that first time last year or this year whenever they had the tryouts for the year coming. It's seen, firstly, who's come back? Who's had a ball in their hand? Who stayed fit? And once we get all that information, now it's trying to find, you know, best fits. How do they fit to your team? But I think most importantly, we've had, 18 months in a lockdown. Let's find out who's had a ball in their hand. You can't go off what you once knew, what you saw before these lockdowns occurred. You have to approach it of what you're seeing right now. I think that's probably number one most important for this upcoming tryout phase.
What about you, Zoe?
I think conversations are really important. So if you've, let's for instance say you've got an under 16 team, making sure you speak to whoever had the bottom ages last year, the under 14s last year, and just getting a guide, because they would be the ones that would have done the Zoom workouts or, you know, whatever it was with those athletes. So being able to try and link that in with what you already know. And then obviously, like Ash said, you have to go with what you can see and what the athletes are putting on the floor for you. But also you need to, in any trial, understand what your trial philosophy is, and whether that's in line with a club or whether you're given free rein, that's up to you. So are you somebody that's going to pick the 10 best players now, or are you somebody that's going to pick the 10 best players for whatever system or style of play you have? Or are you going to pick players that have a long-term, long-term potential to become better athletes? Or are you going to pick a combination of all of those? Combination would be great. So then you can still have some short and long-term success. But that also then plays into how you're going to select your teams and who you're looking for and why. So, again, that might have to link in with what your club philosophy is, but having a really good understanding of that should help you out.
Yeah, so I'm looking at it from a VJPL perspective. Conversations, absolutely important. You need to know who is in which teams, trying to find out who's coming back for a start, because let's face it, after 18 months potentially off, not every athlete will be returning to the sport, which is a bit disappointing, but we do want them to stay engaged as best we possibly can. So the conversations are important, but I think the real main data we have to look at is what they look like on court in front of you at that time. We can only take so much history. This kid's always made a first team all the way through. Doesn't necessarily mean they're making your first team or second team or whatever the case may be moving forward as well. So when you look at your content for what's going to be on at your trials as well, you have to be able to make really quick decisions based on what you see in front of you. So I've said it, I think, a million times. Alley drill, I don't believe, serves any purpose at a trial, because usually it is two dribbles crossover, two dribbles crossover, two dribbles crossover. You're not finding out anything about the kid with a handle there because they're actually not under any pressure. You're not finding anything out about the defender because they know what's coming. So the more you can put them into a little bit of a chaotic atmosphere where there's a lot of scrimmaging, there's a lot of defense, offense, you get to see both sides of the ball, I think is vitally important for our coaches to be able to make a decision based on the athletes in front of them. Now, that might mean that a kid that potentially made a third team previously has now leapfrogged a whole bunch of kids and can make a first team. Well, that can happen because they've had so much time off the court, and we don't want to pigeonhole a kid into that's what you are because that's what you were prior to lockdown as well. We want to make sure that our content gives us the ability to see both sides of the ball. We get to see them play offense. We get to see them play defense. We get to see how they interact with the other athletes. You know, that can be anything. Do they pick the kid up that's been knocked over? Do they just walk past them and go, yep, bad luck, your problem? Those kinds of things can make a massive difference to kids getting picked or not. So making sure that we are looking, and again, this is age group relative. If you're coaching under 12s, you're probably just looking for the long-term kids that can potentially help you in maybe over the next 8 years. If you're coaching an under-18s team, it's probably you're picking for the here and now as to what's going to help you right now, and you've got a little bit more history on that too. But it is going to be different depending on the age group. So I would be a big proponent of if you are coaching in the VJBL systems and you are responsible for organising your trials, get them in gameplay as soon as you can. Small-sided games, get them up and down, get them making decisions, those kinds of things I think can really be helpful for coaches to have to try and pick a team.
Yeah, block training has no place in trials, I don't believe. Because that's not what you're picking for. You're not picking for the best kid that can do a spider dribble. You're picking kids that can, you know, that have the ability to make that first team, second team, third team. And you're not going to, someone could be amazing, and probably a lot of them are going to be amazing at stationary ball handling, given that's all they've been able to do for pretty much the past 18 months. So get them into, and it doesn't have to be 5-on-5 scrimmage straight up. It can be 2v2, 2v1, 3v2, 3v3, like all those sort of small-sided games that we've spoken about, or games of purpose, however you want to call them, as soon as you can, then you'll get to see, one, the skill set, two, the decision-making, three, the ability to play within the group that you're looking for.
I think part of that too, and I think it's a staple of nearly every trial I've seen, 11-man drill, like that 3v2 transition with players that come in from the side. If you've got more than three kids waiting on the side, that's probably not the drill for you at that trial. You need to see kids in reps. You need to see them getting up and down. So if you've got them waiting in line, they're not engaged. You don't get to find out anything from what's going on. Ash, what's your favourite trial drill that you would use to select athletes?
I just love to see them in a 3-on-3, especially early on. One, you're going to see more opportunity of what they can do. They're going to touch the ball more. The hardest part is in that 5-on-5, especially in a trial setting, is you tend not to put an offense in that's going to get the ball from side to side and through hands. So through a 5-on-5 setting, a lot of times you'll see kids who will barely get a shot up for a tryout. How are they going to be able to display what they can do, demonstrate to the coaches that they have the ability to shoot? So in a 3-on-3 setting, we're now forcing the athletes to actually have to make plays and decisions, and it's intense. Like I go back to that point, we'll start to see their skill setting and their fitness levels, who's touched the ball, who's been playing, and their decisions in a 3-on-3 setting early on. We can also break down concepts that you would like to work on throughout the year in a 3-on-3 setting most of the time. And that's when you build it up. I'd like to try and build it up straight away in a 1-on-1, you know, and then a 2-on-1, and then maybe it's a 3-on-3, 4-on-3. And then you go into your 5-on-5. So it's throughout the setting. We might see a kid in a 1-on-1 setting who can absolutely break down their defender, get to the basket and finish. But then we put into a 5-on-5, they forget they've got four other teammates. So now we start to see, too, that decision-making there. It's great if we know we've got a kid who can break down a defender, because we need to see that. How do they play with others? That's another important facet. So it goes back to Zoe's point there. I'm with you on that point. Does block practice fit in a tryouts? Probably not. No, not at all. And the stationary dribbling, you're right. Think about what they've been doing through these COVID lockdowns. We are limited to what we can do. We know they're going to be pretty good at dribbling on the spot. How many times are we dribbling on the spot in a game? So what's your philosophy? And it goes back to now your point, Robbie. What's your philosophy? What are you looking for? How are you applying that into your tryouts so we can get the best information possible? And if you are, when you are making selections, the big thing is be consistent. Be consistent. Don't have reasoning for one kid and then a different reasoning for another. That is where we, you know, parents, coaches around, people observing, they're pretty smart, pretty switched on. They're seeing what you're seeing. Be consistent with your reasoning. Know what you're looking for and have a reason why into why you selected kid versus why you didn't select a kid. And at the end of the day, if you do that, you put yourself in a position where you'll probably pick, or you're going to most likely pick the right team. People are going to respect your process as well.
I like it. Very nice. So you've picked your team. What are you doing first, Zoe? Are you teaching your defense or are you teaching your offense first?
This is a bit of a...
chicken and the egg.
Yeah. I'll normally break down and follow on from what I'll do in trials. So similar to what Ash mentioned, I'll break down concepts of our offense in 3-on-3. So whether that be mid pick and play, whether it, you know, flare screens, down screens, whatever it might be, we'll work that in a 3-on-3. I'll continue that then once I've got my team and add the defensive element that I want for our team. So then the reads for offensive decision making become harder. So I guess it's both, sort of both. but I am a games approach believer. So I always like to two-way teach and always have both sides of the ball working in every drill. So it would be sold that we're going through the offensive way, but we would be working on the defense at the same time.
Yep. You the same, Ash, or any different?
Old Ash would have said offense. I think now as I grow and I watch junior basketball, I see how important defense side is. And I'm not talking about presses and zones. I'm talking about teaching our athletes how to guard their player. And especially coming out of it, I think if we look at this scenario right now, coming out of the lockdown situation, I'd definitely teach my defense first because they just haven't been working on that. I'd trust the O and to put some basic concepts in early, but I'd really worry about how much defensive work they've had. So I'd make that a high priority from the start and put in, one, how are we going to close out? How are we going to guard? How are we going to rotate? But I'd put it into a setting. It wouldn't be... I'd probably do a couple of minutes of that block. Let's work on the technique, but then I'm putting it in scenarios, which I think we're going to see in a game. If I'm a VJBL coach, I'm probably putting in a press breaker because I know I'm about to see heavy presses, especially early in grading. Now, do I agree with it? No. I'd love to just see straight up man early on, man-to-man defense. And I'd be definitely putting in an offensive zone set at the end of my practice just to be ready because I know post-14s, you're going to see heavy zones. But most importantly, I think if I get my defense in place first, it's going to set us up for a strong year. And then when you go to your offense, you now have built a foundation of two-way teach on that end defensively.
Question for you, Rob. When do you put in your baseline out of bounds?
Depends on your age group. If it's under 12s, don't bother. Like, in all honesty, those kids have enough problems passing and catching and finishing without worrying about having to put in a baseline out of bounds. I saw a coach this year, honestly, that had four kids that would stand on the three-point line, one person inbounding. Coach would just yell out one of the players' names and that player would cut to the basket. And it's incredible how many times that kid got an open layup that they missed. Like, it was the...
Robbie, it's funny you say that. At back in 2017, when I was at the Berwick Academy, I always would forget to put a baseline in. So I when we were playing a game, I'd be like, hey, four out. The top two would cross and I'd put, so we'd go four out, but we wouldn't go corners. We'd go higher wings and the seams. So the seams would cross to either side of the key and the ones who were probably fouling extended would just cross the court. So once the X happened, they just switch sides and we'd score every time. It just gives no one to expect four people out inside the three. They're kind of like, whoa. And if they're in the zone, we just pass it in anyway.
Yep.
But it's so funny.
It is.
You start to realise they don't really matter that much until you get to that top tier level or higher level where defences are in the man-to-man. You've actually got to screen or cut to get someone else open.
Yep. Well, we see a lot of trainings that are, you know, a solid 15, 20, even half an hour is spent on a baseline out of bounds, and think about that from a proportion sense of how many times you have that in a game. It might be maybe 1% of the game is baseline out of bounds, and we're spending, you know, a solid third of our training session on practicing this baseline out of bounds. So it's just, yeah, I suppose the reason for the question was just keeping that in mind.
That's something you can do at your trials, potentially. If you're starting to look at decision-making for athletes, and we're going to assume you've got an older age group, so a 16s or an 18s team, that might be a case of you teach a baseline out of bounds at that trial, and that starts your offense, so to speak. So you're going to play it off the baseline, you play to your stop or a score, then they go down the other end and play 5-on-5, then they come back down and play 5-on-5 and you reset. So it's a way of understanding which players can follow instructions and which players can make reads, because to your point, Ash, like, you just got mad chaos with players just running around, essentially. Mm. Someone's going to lose track of someone somewhere, and it's the ability to know, actually, I'm open, I can cut to the basket now. So it's those kinds of things. So there is a place for it, but younger age groups, don't bother.
Well, and you can use it for retention as well. Yeah. Who can retain something from one trial to the next, meaning who can retain it from your training to a game.
Yep. So. I think there's a lot of interesting stuff in that. So in terms of the offense and defense, I would probably be a teach the offense first and defense work it out for mine. It's, you know, no one wants to win a game 20-21. Everyone wants to win 121-122. Phoenix ball. It's just how it works. I like it. So stats within games. So when you're coaching, Ash, what stats do you track? Do you take stats at training sessions? And what's the most overrated statistic in your opinion?
What I used to track, and when I say used to, when I was coaching, like just even the Frankston Youth League team this year, when you receive the stat sheet, we liked open threes. So we would look to see how many threes we had taken. I was not against mid-range jumpers, but we really preached about getting open threes, making sure the ball got inside. So I'd look to see how many threes we'd taken. Offensive rebounds. That was the next big thing. We wanted to make sure that we were producing more offensive possessions through our O boards. And then lastly, stops. We call it kills. I know a lot of people use a similar term. But we were trying to get three stops in a row and how many stops we were getting. We're also doing, we also started to track pre-kills. So if we got two stops in a row, how many times did we do that? Was that still just as effective for us? So we had kills, pre-kills, how many times we fell short. You know, in some games we were falling short a lot. So we would then go back to see where were we breaking down? Why could we only get two stops in a row? Where did we lack it in positioning? Did we lack it in intensity? That were the three probably statistics we were looking at. Obviously the kills were tracked by us as a staff. The rest I could see just from the stats they were given. Not everyone's got that ability. So, you know, in the juniors, we just don't have those statisticians. In terms of stat, I think overrated. Probably that, I don't know, I don't really have one that's too overrated. I don't get caught up so much on steals. And what I mean by that is, you know, I really encouraged our players to try not to create turnovers, force turnovers. So if we had limited steals, I wasn't so caught up on it if I thought we were still playing great defense and forcing turnovers, you know, dribbling off at knees, bad passes. That was great for us. So that was probably the one where if we were still getting the ball back, I wasn't so caught up on that steals number, but I still love high steals, Robbie, so I won't say it's too overrated.
As long as your defensive rebounding numbers are okay, you're all good. No problem at all.
Yeah, that's right. Correct.
Zoe, what do you got?
So I guess when I'm handed the stat sheet, the first things I look at are turnovers, particularly our turnovers and their turnovers. That tells me a lot. The glass. So offensive boards in particular, both us and them. Then I'll look at, you know, who's getting the job done for us from a field goal percentage-wise and in context. So, you know, 1 from 1 is great. But, you know, if you're 6 of 7, we've got to get them the ball more. And then that'll help with what we're going to do next and the next offense. In game, on the bench, always having fouls tracked, us and them, especially on Friday night, you don't have the bench scorers with the paddles to tell you how much. And to be honest, it's unfair for us to expect parents to be right on the ball to be able to tell you before the next possession happens that someone's got 3 or 4 fouls. So making sure we've got someone to track that. And obviously stops is a good one to be able to sort of get a gauge of how you're going defensively and generally, you know, if you can get your 3 stops in a row – you know, the offense is generally ticking over as a result. Something that's overrated. I don't really have one that's overrated, but there's one I would tell people to, especially if they're at, they're somewhere that where they've got statistics that they get handed to them, which is to handle with caution. It's still important, but the plus minus, you need to put it in context. So a plus minus of, let's say, plus 12, and they've only done that in, say, 9 minutes, but that's the 9 minutes junk at the end where the game's over, you've blown it out because the other team's pretty much put the cue in the rack, you know, all that sort of stuff. Is that a good gauge of you know, what the, how the game's gone for that athlete? When you look at somebody else who might only be plus six, but it was right in the thick of it, right when you, you know, the game was on the line and it was tough. Or, and the other way, you know, someone might be minus eight, but they were on the floor at the same time as all your DPs, which you absolutely have to pay rent to those athletes, you know, the young ones coming through, and if you've got the ability to do it, do it. Were they on the floor with those less experienced athletes for a long period of time? And if they were, that's going to affect the plus minus there. So it's not overrated. I think it gives you good information and it's a good statistic, but I'd handle it with caution and make sure it's in context.
And that's probably the big one too, Zoe. I think every statistic has its place. It's just about understanding where you think that fits within your philosophy. You know, if you want to be a high intensity defensive team, get stops, and you want steals, then you, and that's what you're checking, then that's you. You know, I know some coaches love the points in the paint. Big thing for them is how many points in the paint are they getting? They're checking that little box, that little chat box on the stat sheet. You know, second chance points. I guess when it comes down to our competitions, it also depending on the statistician as well. Like, are they getting it right? Or what are we basing it off? So I think every stat is a place for it. You just got to find what fits your philosophy and how you apply it. It's really important. And are you emphasizing? Like, that's the other big thing. We talked about with your teams, like, if that stat's important to you but your players don't know, how are you going to expect to be able to tick certain statistical checkpoints off? You got to make sure you emphasize it and it fits your system.
What would you go with?
I reckon playing time's actually a little bit overrated. Like, you have this, geez, I played them 18 of the 20 minutes. Okay. Like, shockingly, your team is usually at its best when your best players play. So if you're in a position where you have that tracked, so I'm talking like Big V, NBL 1 and higher and those sorts of competitions, not so much the junior levels, court time is grossly overrated. You're going to want to play your best players.
What about in tournament play?
Tournament play. Yeah, okay. Yeah, you got to be mindful. You got to manage. There's no question. You don't want to just load everyone up with minutes at the start of the week if you potentially need them at the end. But ultimately, the score that matters is the one at the end of the game. So if you have to play those players to get the win, you play those players to get the win. I think that's a really important part of it. And look, let's face it, stats will lie at times. You know, we've all been burnt by that player, myself in particular, that goes, you know, 15% over the course of a week from the three-point line, then rolls out in a gold medal game and just is lights out. Like, we've all seen it. But there's some stuff that you can do with
all
it.
Mates.
Yeah.
The memories.
Yeah, yeah. It's nice to be reminded of that stuff every now and again. But, I mean, that happens. You know, it's the numbers will lie to you in that situation, but when that player catches the ball on the three-point line, you see the whole bench stand up as they're releasing it and they miss it. Your eyes are probably telling you they're still a shooter despite what the numbers are telling you in that situation. So you do have to be a little bit mindful that get eyes on it, because if you just get a box score at the end, which has got a shooting percentage, that may not tell you the whole story. So there's some more information to go with that, I think.
One thing I would say, though, is I'd discourage anybody from having any statistics at the VJBL level taken by anybody other than what is required for the game, so like fouls in particular. Like, that's it. That's all you need to know. If you're with the younger age groups, and I think there's a question on that a bit later, maybe minutes, you know, to make sure everyone's getting a good go. But other than that, you know, we don't need to see that somebody's, you know, had 28 points and, you know, 30 assists and all that sort of stuff, because I think that sends the wrong message at that age group. Yep. That it's about statistics and it's not about development and it's not about winning with your group. And you know, as they get older and those statistics start to be taken at a more professional level, that's when, you know, it's still not vital or important, I think, to an individual, but that's when you can start and look at it if you want to, and you've got the ability to still understand that it's about your team and not yourself.
Yep. Like it. Next question. I don't know whether I should feel personally attacked by this or I should feel a little bit proud that maybe the message is getting through.
Do you want me to ask it?
No. I'll ask it. I'm like referring to myself in the third person.
Sure.
Yeah. Why does Rob hate zone presses so much? Okay, so a couple of contingencies to this to start off with. Don't hate them. There is a place for them. I do like them. I have used them myself. However, teaching a zone press in under 12s, I don't believe, and I'll put the asterisk on this, this might just be Rob's rant, I don't believe helps your athletes get any better. Purely because you are playing into a lack of IQ from the opposition because they don't know, don't go to the trapping areas. You are playing into a lack of physical ability because they get in corners and they don't have the ability to either reverse the ball out of that. They're too small, so when the double team comes, they get trapped in there. It doesn't help them. And they don't, at that point, have the skill set to split a double before it gets there. So the presses I'm talking about in this, that 1-2-1-1 arrow press, which I feel like everyone gets taught on a Friday night to start off with. It's like when we start talking about, do you start with offense or defense? I think the first thing is a 1-2-1-1 press. And I understand why. It's very effective on a Friday night. But how many times do you see that work in under-18s basketball? How many times do you see it work in 16s basketball? You very, very rarely. Like Trevor Gleeson had some success with it, with being up the floor in the NBL with Perth. When he was like right up, like Wagstaff, Matty Knight, those guys were fantastic on the front line of that press. But we also saw how it went in the NBA. So it's one of those things where I don't think that helps you. I'm all for defenses being up the floor. Everyone's accountable for a player. You can help, you can plug, you can run and jump, you can trap, do all that sort of stuff. What I have an issue with is the zone press where the biggest, strongest, most dominant athlete sits on the inbounder and the person inbounding the ball, they'll face guard the other guards. And then they'll just, hey, if you're good enough to lob it over the top, great, but we know that's going to turn into a jumping contest, or we can just go and run and trap with the biggest, strongest player. That's my issue with it. So for mine, I wouldn't use it. I would discourage other coaches to use it. And I'm not saying you can't. Of course you can. And please, the hate mail will come in hard. Rob.Coulter at Basketball Victoria, despite what I've told Ash earlier. Like, you are more than welcome to tell me I'm wrong. And I understand it will win you games early. But it, I don't believe it helps develop the athletes on either side of the ball at the right level, personally.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. You always see, whilst the early developer is always on the front line of the press and has amazing success, your long-term, lanky, maybe slightly uncoordinated, but the kid that actually needs to be involved in gameplay is down on your back line. And that's all the only place they stay. They'll take a few steps forward because we've got a steal. Oh, we've scored. Now I'll run a few steps back to where I was. And that's their game. And it's just not. It's not what we should be about. We should be about making these athletes better. Hopefully, just to put another knock on the size 5 basketball, hopefully that might change a few things and help us, or help the athletes be able to do those things that you're saying plays it, those deficiencies that the press plays into. But ultimately, us as coaches, it's like when the zone ban came in and now all of a sudden everyone's running pack line. And it's like, okay, how about we don't try and find loopholes? How about we try and coach our way to making these athletes the best athletes that they can be and give them the best chance to become basketball lifers? Because at the end of the day, that's our job.
Ash, you got anything different?
No, not really. I think you guys nailed it. But I think it's really important to come back to it's not encouraging our coaches not to go win. Yep. It's just changing the process and how you do it. We still go out there and try and win, but set your kids up with a foundation that will last their whole career. When we run these presses at a young age, we're encouraging them to take really poor risks and make bad decisions, where the aggressiveness is great on defense. But when they're just kind of running at the ball, and goes to Zoe's point, the size 5 ball is going to make a difference because now they're going to have the strength to be able to just pass it through the zone, find the gaps. Now does your team have the ability to contain? I'm a big believer if we build those foundations from under 12s, and like the zone, there's a place for it, the press. You know, when we need to speed up the game, when you do need a couple extra stops or a steal, second chance opportunity, that's when that press comes in. And that's where you got to teach your athletes how to make the decision, when to go, when to stay. And probably too early on in our presses, we just teach that aggressiveness too much. So when they do get to the 14s and 16s, it's a natural instinct for them to just attack and rush that ball, and that ball just goes over the top. The next thing, a lead is blown out. And our athletes are looking at us as coaches going, well, what do we do? So just, again, I'm not against it. I do believe with you, Robbie, at a young age, just teach them how to play defense. And, yeah, you may lose you some games, but I think in the long run it'll be better for you.
Yep, no question. So thanks, everyone, that nailed me on that one. I do appreciate it, but I'm standing by my statement and, you know, Ash and Zoe are on my side. So how do we motivate a player that seems disinterested? What do you got, Zoe?
Well, you have to find out why. So why are they disinterested? Are they somebody that's potentially not – they don't want to play? They don't want to play anymore, but, you know, we've seen this in the past. Parents love the game. They love the social aspect for their child. They love that they're, you know, out and exercising and things like that. Is that why they don't want to play? If that's the reason, then it's probably needs to be a conversation with the parents because it's really hard to turn that around. Are they an athlete that doesn't want to – that's disinterested because they're bored, because they're not being challenged, they're not feeling like, you know, anything – everything's a bit too easy? And that's where, as coaches, we need to restructure our session. You might find that some athletes sort of flourish or enjoy being the demo kid, you know, the one that's always front and center and helps teaching others. And there's we've had those kids in the past that, you know, they're almost like ready-made coaches. So use them, and it gets them more involved and it gives them a reason. So I think step one is to find out why. There's probably a whole host of other reasons that I can't think of right now, but find out why and then go from there. And it can be as simple as conversation, simple as tweaking your session, simple as using them as an aid within your sessions and within games. You know, it might be that they don't play. Like, who wants to go and sit on a bench for a whole year? You know, find ways to make them play, or understand that, you know, that athlete needs to be given the time and given the opportunity to be able to enjoy the game. And as soon as they start in, because enjoyment will link to motivation. So you've got to get back to that enjoyment first and then motivate them. So then you can work on their skill set and all that sort of stuff. But while they're disengaged, it's really hard to help them in any way.
What about you, Ash?
Every case is different. That's probably the biggest one I've learned. Everyone's got a different reason. It comes to enjoyment. I think one big lesson I learned when I was playing at college, we had a tough coach and not all of my teammates enjoyed his style of coaching. You know, he was hard on us. He pushed us to a new level. Some would call him probably a yeller. I loved playing for coaches like that. I could handle it, but not all my teammates could. And early on in the piece, when a teammate would go to quit, I'd always try to convince him, don't quit, you regret it. But what I started to learn was when you convince them to come back, they weren't fully there. They didn't want to be there. And actually, it hurt the team even more. So going, you know, now in my philosophy, if an athlete wants to quit because they're not enjoying it, I actually just let them go now. I say, no problems. You know, you have to go find what you want to do and what you enjoy. Some come back. Some go, that was just, I needed that break to realize how much I loved basketball. Others come back and go, you know what? I realized I was playing because I thought I had to and I didn't enjoy it as much. So that's one big thing with a kid who might be disinterested. You just got to have those conversations. If it is an enjoyment and they do want to quit, I do let him go now. If it is another reason, it's just, I guess, having more conversations and finding solutions how we can help. And that is probably one of the hardest parts about being a coach now. You do look after all 10 athletes that you have, and you've got to find out what makes them tick and how you can help them. And everyone's different. Everyone's different in how they learn. So, yeah, it's just really important knowing it's a case by case. And good luck to everyone out there dealing with that, because we understand it's, you know, it can be difficult. And I don't say that with sarcasm. I really mean it. It is especially now coming out of 18 months of lockdown, it may be quite difficult for coaches coming back to just know like what they are doing is really important. And in the long run, so the kids and the parents will always be thankful for that time you do invest in their child.
Yep. And it is hard because most athletes turn up because they want to enjoy sport. They enjoy the fun aspect. They enjoy being involved where, you know, what they remember basketball being 18 months ago may be very different to what basketball is coming back for them as well. So making sure that we do take a little bit of a pressure off, we're not expecting the world from them when they do return. That might be a real point of contention for a few of the athletes coming back into it and knowing that, you know, what was fun for them before may not be fun for them now. Their skill set now might not be what it was previously. Decision-making, all those kinds of things. So we do have to be mindful of that too. So I think the conversation is absolutely a really important part. I'm with you, Ash. Have a break. Like it's, you know, it's not a case of cut and run and you're out. It is, okay, let's maybe take a week on this. We'll find out, do you miss this? Do you not miss this? If you don't miss it, that's cool. Do your thing. Like we don't want to have to force anyone into playing. Like that's a path that just leads to misery for a lot of people. What we do want to do, though, is be flexible enough so that we can at least accommodate an athlete that may be having a little bit of a tough time that maybe even we don't know about it. Like there might be stuff going on at school or at home or whatever the case may be. So a lot of the times when athletes are disinterested, it's because there's other stuff going on in their lives that may not be the most important thing that we're seeing at that point in time. So I think the conversation is really important, but that little bit of a break, but let's not try and force people into stuff either.
And it's difficult, Robbie. Like, I'm not sitting on this podcast saying I've nailed it. I get it wrong all the time. Like, especially in my role, you try to drive a high standard, and this is where, well, I forget this is a podcast.
Yeah, the whole visual aspect is a little lost on you.
Visuals, oh my goodness, sorry, guys. But you raise that bar, and you're saying, kids, you've got to come meet us up here. We're gonna raise that standard. And we push into that standard and sometimes forget that they may be battling through, and there's definitely times I've got it wrong and misread the situation. And I think that's the more I go through it, I get a little bit better every time at trying to recognise the situation, but I still mess it up, and that's something that I think I'm doing a better job of being self-aware of, okay, what are they going through? And especially now post-lockdowns, well, I'm still in the one, so I won't say post just yet, but when we do come out of the lockdown, just understanding that there is going to have to be a little wriggle room, that there's going to be good and bad days, and just knowing that it's okay, that if they do have a bad day here and there, it's not the end of the world. And I think the more support we show, the better they'll be.
Well, and it's not always as simple as just knowing they're not enjoying it. Sometimes it's the body language. Sometimes it's the words they use. Sometimes it's their competitiveness that may drop away. Like, it is different for every athlete. Like, you hit that point before, Ash. Like, everyone is going to be different. Like, I've got an athlete I work with at the moment who will openly admit she has resting bitch face. And if I was to walk in and say, damn, what's up with you today? Like, nothing. Like, I'm pretty happy. So it's not always a case of what you see. Your eyes can be a little bit deceptive on those things at times. So it's have that conversation and find out what's going on with them and go from that point as well.
Yeah, exactly. It's funny. I get told that too, Robbie.
Resting bitch face?
My face, yeah. So kids are, like, the amount of kids in the last couple of weeks who have made contact go, oh, you know, I always thought you didn't like me, Ash. I was like, what gave you that impression? Oh, the way you looked at me. I was like, oh, no. Like, sorry, I'm just very serious at basketball. Like, please no, I don't dislike anyone. But yeah, the amount of kids said, like, yeah, it's your face, man. You're always mean mugging. I'm like, oh, my bad. Sorry. I was probably just hungry.
Big chance. Brisket going at the back at the moment. We'll send you some up. It's not quite Uber Eats. Similar delivery fee, though. It will cost you, unfortunately.
That's all right. Send it up, mate.
Excellent. What are you better off getting an athlete? Are you better off getting a player better at their strengths or working on their weaknesses? Ash, what's your preference here?
Yeah, I try to word it differently. You're always trying to complement your strengths. How do you complement them? So you want to, and that's how you try to, I guess, put it in a positive way. This is what you're really good at. Now, how do we complement it? This is, instead of going, hey, this is what you're poor at, we're going to fix it. Okay, now you do this really well. So now how can we complement it to make you more of a whole player? And just trying to word it differently to give the kids more positivity around it. Because in the game, if you've just told them, hey, man, hey, this Johnny, you really suck on that left hand, bud. You're going to have to go work on that. Next time he's going for a left-hand layup, you know he's second-guessing himself. Where you go, hey, Johnny, man, that right side, ooh, you are dominant. How do we compliment? If they take that right away, how are we going to compliment to your game? And he's going to go, I'm going to go work on that left. Yeah, I know you can do it. Now they're going, they feel like they've got that support behind them on that left hand. Or you could go to, you know, my some of my old coaches, yeah, they definitely, I guess, dialed in on my weaknesses and were very comfortable and let me know that I sucked at certain areas. So, you know, it depends. Coach, yeah. Every coach is different.
Good to see you're over it too. Yeah. And you haven't, you know, harbored that grudge for a while.
Yeah. It's only taken 15 years, but other than that, I'm fine.
There's a little bit of a twitch you've got going on in your head at the moment. Yeah, what's going on with that?
Yeah, a little post-traumatic stress there. It's like, ooh,
what about you, Zoe? What would you be working on?
I think it comes back to age groups again. With my VMPP athletes, because we don't get to see them as often, you know, we don't get to see them every week. We only get to see them maybe once or twice a month in a good year. Our coaches at the hubs are given a performance plan which has the weaknesses that they need to work on, but there also needs to be dedicated time to make either their good strength, their skill set great, or their great skill set elite. Because every athlete needs to have, I believe, an elite skill set to be able to go to the next level in at least one, depending on the level, one, two, three sort of areas.
My sort of take on that, I suppose, is you have to work on people's strengths. Like if we have an athlete that's a phenomenal shooter, for argument's sake, and we're going to sit there and say, you're a great shooter, but geez, you really lack defensively, we're going to put a lot of time and effort into trying to make you a better defender. What you end up with is a cookie cutter athlete, where every athlete looks exactly the same because you're making every athlete the same by just trying to get everyone's deficiencies a little bit better. Where in reality, not everyone needs to be that type of player. Elite shooters need to be elite shooters. So we have to try and turn them into that and make that strength a better strength even.
And Robbie, it all goes with the age group too. The older you get, the more direct you're going to be with that player and let them know, hey, you need to fix this.
Yep.
This is an area that you need to go out and improve on. Where if it's a young age group, it's just trying to teach them how to be an all-round player. So, yeah, going back to how do you complement what you're really good at right now.
Yep. I like it. I like it. Zoe, next one's at you. What are the three most important things you would say to a shooter to improve them as a shooter?
Are you talking from a skill set perspective?
Yeah, sure.
So eyes on target is a big one. The amount of athletes I work with that don't know what their target is, don't know what they're aiming for, and just it's just a throw at the rim would be a big one. The next one will be work on shot release. So if the shot release is at a speed, we don't – at a good speed, at an international, WNBL, NBL, whatever it is that they're looking to get to, not where they are, where they're looking to get to, then we don't adjust the speed to make the shot. We adjust the shot to the speed. And so then eventually we get to a point where that speed of shot release becomes – natural. I would only change an athlete's technique if it is diabolical. Like if there is something, you know, a massive hitch or a massive dip or, you know, both elbows shot from the hips or whatever it might be. Other than that, you know, if it is genuine sort of within the lines of what a fundamental shot is believed to be, I would then just work on that shot as to what it needs to be. And if I am making adjustments, I'm not changing six things at once. I'll pick out the most critical and we'll work on that until we've got that. And if we've got that down, then we may move on. We may not. But, you know, I think sometimes we get a little overwhelmed with or we overwhelm athletes with, you know, you didn't bend your knees enough, your follow through, you know, your lock and snap wasn't right, your fingers were around the wrong way, weren't pointing down, all that sort of stuff. And they don't hear any of it, or they might take one. So just focusing on one at a time. But from a mental perspective, if I had a shooter, the only thing I tell who is a proven shooter, the only thing I ever tell them is there's no one else in the gym. So don't stress about the defense sprinting at you. You know, if you can get your shot away, there's no one else in the gym and the next one's going down, because you always need to have that. Obviously, there needs to be a decision of if it's the right shot and the wrong shot in the context of the game, or, you know, how they're going. But ultimately, at the end of a game, it doesn't matter if your shooter hasn't shot well. If you need a three to win your game, you're going to put it in your shooter's hands. So that you need to show them that faith. You need to show them that you're behind them and you still believe in them, because shooters in particular will go to a really negative space because their job is so dictated by make or miss. So need to show them that, hey, next one's going down. We're good. You know, when they miss their shot, we don't react massively on the sideline and throw our hands in the air or drop our head or shake our head. We just move on and keep them in that mindset. Because, yeah, the shooters that I've had in at the, I guess, been lucky enough to deal with, they find that dark space very quickly, and it takes weeks to get it out of it. So the best thing is to try and shut it off and not let them get there.
Ash, you are a resident shooter, much to Coops's disgust. What would be the three things you would like to be hearing as a shooter, or you would tell your athletes?
Jenny's going to be angry with that one too. She tells me all the time she's a better shooter.
Defensive specialist, we'll put Jenny down.
She'll remind you of Italian season where she shot the three well. Number one, clear your mind. Clear your mind. Now, I love to go back to a Ted Lasso quote for you.
Ooh,
I know you enjoy this, but be a goldfish, right? Clear your mind. Whether you're 0-9, kind of back to your point, Zoe, 0-9 or 9-9, clear your mind every time. Two, be ready. Legs loaded, hands ready. Every time that ball's coming in, anywhere near you, you're ready to shoot that ball. And then number three, shoot to make it. How many times we have players who about to catch it and they're thinking about everything like around, they're literally shooting to miss. Like, I hope it goes in, I hope we do this, hope we do that. So shoot to make. Don't give it a reason to miss. Go through your shooting plan. Every player should have a shooting plan. All right? And I'm not talking to the extent of someone like a Kyle Korver that has 24 points to check off. Like, everyone has to have a little shooting plan. Know what that is. Every time you catch the ball, you're shooting to make it. Go through your shooting plan each time. It does it. If it misses, bang, again, we reset. Clear your mind. Be a goldfish. Don't worry about the last one. Hands, legs loaded, hands ready, shoot to make. And just continue that process every time.
Yep. I'm a bit of a blend of both of you guys, in all honesty. So the big things for me, hands ready. Like, I get so frustrated with athletes, and it's very similar to what you're saying, like legs loaded, hands ready. I get really frustrated with athletes that coach the ball, catch the ball upright, or their hands come up at the last second. Like, it's show the passer where you want the ball. So making sure they have a target to go and hit. Eyes on target, absolutely vital. But the big thing for me is shoot it up. Like, we have so many athletes that shoot the ball flat, and hey, ding, size 5 basketball will hopefully fix this for us. All the haters out there, much love. We will make sure that our athletes shoot the ball with arc is a really big thing. Like, it's just, and it's something I saw on some clinic notes from Lono from back in his Frankston days. Let it fly. Like, that's the big thing. Shoot that thing up and let it fly.
Shooters shoot, Robbie. Shooters shoot.
Yeah.
Get them up.
And everyone else plays in the low post and rebound. Like, it's right. Just, you know, some of us had different career trajectories, potentially, Ash.
That's why I play with some of the best offensive rebounders, mate. I gave them a living. All the bricks off the rim. You're welcome, guys.
And where are they now?
They probably went and made a lot of money.
No, and in all honesty, it's it really is shoot to your comfort. Like, it's not every athlete is built the same way. Not everyone will have the same shooting technique. Shoot what is comfortable for you, and similar to what you're saying, Zoe, as long as there's no glaring issues fundamentally, that's okay. Like, I'm really big on shoot the ball with one hand, don't push off with your guide hand and those kinds of things, but that's not always as easy to do as it is to tell people to do. So it's those kinds of things that make the biggest difference, I think, for mine, and it's going to be different for everyone. But, yeah. You know, the early prep is really big for me. Like, shoot the ball up, give it some air, give it to Mark, and just be comfortable with it. Yep. Like, shoot to what is comfortable for you. Next question. What's the most important skill for a coach to have, in your opinion, Ash?
Communication skills.
Okay. Sorry. What about, sorry. You want to elaborate a little further on that?
Yeah, you've got to be able to talk. You've got to be able to break things down. You've got to be able to teach. I know it's very, very general, very generic. I think, especially for younger kids,
sell a story, be able to tell a story. And I don't make tour forever, but like you want, how do you keep them engaged? Young kids, how do you relate it to something they know, terminology? I know there's, I've gone blank on the Irish coach, Callagher, is it? Coach Callagher, he works in the Irish basketball community. Thanks for your help there, guys.
We like to watch you flounder.
To be honest, anytime you speak, Ash, it's like you're speaking Irish anyway. Like, in particular, if we get a text message from you, like, it takes us a long time. There is no Ash Arnott in Google Translate for some of your text messages.
How ironic that I've said communication skills, and now I'm getting blasted. The irony is unreal. But he talks about terminology, how you communicate, and how do you relate it to an image. I actually borrowed one of his. He was trying to teach his young athletes how to sit in the stance, and every time he said "get low" or "get in the stance," he said it wasn't consistent. So he told us the story of he then asked the athletes to get into a position like they're about to take a poop in the woods. And he said, believe it or not, everyone sat down low. So from there on, when he was coaching that team, if he wanted his team to be in a stance on defense, he would yell out, "You're pooping in the woods," or to that extent. And that always made me laugh. So at the last camps, when we did our under 12s, I trialed that. And it was amazing to see how low the kids would get. How do you relate it back to an image? How do you communicate and break stuff down? It's so important in how the kids learn. So that's my big one.
Zoe, what do you got?
Well, communication is one for me, but because Ash said that, I'll come up with a different one. So for mine is the ability to develop relationships and understanding of athletes. And it does come down to communication. But a big part of that is being able to set your ego aside and understand where they're coming from, what they're feeling, what they're thinking, and how you can, I guess, use that as well to your advantage. You know, do you have an athlete that just is petrified of that last shot to shoot? Well, then you don't run the offense to get them the shot if you need it. You know, those sort of things. But have them understand too that you're there for them as a person. You're not just there for them as an athlete and a statistic. You want to help them as a human, and you get far more buy-in, far more cooperation and trust from those athletes than you would that if you just sort of skate through and, you know, coach them as you coach them. You know, and then I suppose that links back to then your motivation question before. If you've got an understanding of who they are and you've got a relationship with them, and they are sort of lacking that motivation, you've then got the ability to try and help them out with that or fix that or find out why. Whereas if it's just cold and you've got no real connection to that athlete, they're probably not going to tell you the truth.
Yep. Both two very good answers that I probably would have taken had I taken this one first. Resiliency, no question, as a coach. I think that's really important. You've got to be able to listen to the right people but also shut out the noise that doesn't really matter in that point. But the other one's probably curious confidence. I think it's really good to always be curious as a coach and trying to find different ways to do things, learn from other people, but also know when to say no. Like, so I'm
did you try to out Ted Lasso me, bro?
I don't believe I did. It's
be curious.
Be curious, come but on, not mate. Judgmental, I believe, yeah. Is that quote. Come on, Ash.
Carry on.
Yeah,
carry
thank
on.
You very much. But I think that is a part of it. Like, it's a good thing to go and seek out new knowledge, but it's also knowing when to say no to that new knowledge and say, actually, this is nice to have and I've really enjoyed learning about it, but I'm sticking with what I have because I'm confident in what I do. And knowing when to say yes and no, I think, is a really important part. Like, Twitter is a wonderful world for coach education, in all honesty. And like, my direct messages, that stuff I send myself when I see a new set or see a new saying or something like that I really like and I hold on to, it's like my playbook is now about 18 pages long, but I don't have a team and I can't run it all. So knowing to pick and choose what you need to know and at what time is really important.
I think that is important too from a coach protection as well. You know, Ash has said it a million times, there's a lot of experts out there who have got a million opinions on what you're doing and who you are as a coach and how you're coaching and all those sort of things. And sometimes you need to hear that stuff. It might give you something that you need and can help you be better as a coach. And other times, you've just got to let that go. And it's hard. I found that really hard early on. I had someone, we all know the old Hoops forum that was on, and someone got on there and named me and basically said I was terrible. And I'll be honest, that was the first time I'd ever had an encounter like that at all, and I cried. Like, I sat there and cried. But now, well, one, I don't even go on that anymore, but even if I did, that says more about them than me. And it's that you've got to take that. Yeah, but you've got to understand, you know, getting to that place where it's I don't really care what they have to say about me if it's negative, and it's just, you know, trying to be condescending. Getting to that place where it doesn't bother you takes a little bit of time.
Yeah, for sure. It's always hard to hear something. It's even when you're hearing feedback, though, and you feel like you're hearing that you've done something wrong or you didn't do something right. It's always hard to hear. But again, it's like just putting that ego away and understanding that any decision you make as a coach, someone may have done something different, and that's okay. I think the beautiful thing about basketball is so many ways to be successful in this game. We see it every year. So just know that you're not going to keep everyone happy, and someone's probably going to be upset, and it's always hard to read, you know, when you do read a comment like that. But no, look, that's only one person's opinion. And as long as you, again, go back to your point, Robbie, stay curious and always trying to continue to learn, you're going to end up being a pretty good coach somewhere down the line.
Like it. Last question. Do you believe in equal playing time? And at what level should that change? Zoe, we'll throw this at you first.
I do believe in equal playing time for 12s and 14s. I think once you start to get to 16s and 18s, is especially now, under 16s in particular, are starting to transition more and more into senior basketball as well, whether that be youth league, Big V, NBL 1 and the like. I think that there needs to be an accountability for the amount of work that's put in, the commitment, dedication and skill set. At the end of the day, our game at a senior level in particular discriminates. So if you're not going to put the work in early, that game is going to basically not be there for you. I'm a pretty prime example of that. You know, I was a foreman at 5'10". Should have put more time into being a guard, but didn't. So, you know, retired at 24. Like, it's – we've got to start teaching that lesson, I think, as early as we can, but we've also got to give them the opportunity to develop to the point where they decide whether they want this to be a part of their life. You know, if they want to be a basketballer or they want to play senior basketball, you only get that by playing. So, yeah, 12s and 14s, I say, equal playing time, and then after that, it's, you know, you don't sit someone for a whole game. I'm definitely not saying that. Everyone plays, but – you know, commitment to practice, commitment to the team, you know, skill set, all that sort of stuff then starts to come in and play a part, I believe.
Yep. Ash?
Sammy, Zoe, young, I think even court time, there'd be nothing worse as an 11 or 12-year-old living in, you know, Dandenong, travelling to Broadmeadows for a game to play 4 minutes. You know, talk about hurt their enjoyment. That's gonna really kill them. So, yeah, early on in the piece, definitely early, even court time. As you get older and it becomes a bit more elite, I think that's when it changes. And listen, you'd be disappointed, Robbie, if I didn't give you story time here, mate. Oh. There we go. And I may have told this story in a podcast before, but when I was playing at college, in my junior year, there was probably a month and a half stage there where my court time went from 20 minutes a game to zero. Just wasn't playing, wouldn't get on the court. In games, we were losing by 25 points. You know, and I'm thinking, what do I got to do? And so I went into the coach's office and I said, Coach, like, give it to me straight, mate. What do I got to do? And he goes, no, my bad, Ash. I just forgot you. And it took me a couple of seconds. I took that in and I just turned and said, no, there's no way. And he goes, what do you mean? I said, well, firstly, I sit in the first seat of the bench right next to you. I'm Australian and I'm your captain. But there's no way you forgot me. Like, I'm the loudest guy on the bench. So, and I just said, please, just give it to me straight. Why am I not playing? And he finally told me, you got to go work on this, this, and this. That's why you're not playing. And it was so refreshing because the next day I went and worked on it. Then my playing time started to change. So it kind of brings me to my point. If you aren't going to give out even court time, that's okay. But make sure the kids that you're not playing, they know why. Give them a reason. You know, tell them what they need to go work on. It comes back to that feedback as it becomes a bit more elite and winning becomes more important. It's really important you communicate that with them. And it's refreshing. So I always said from that day, when I become a coach, I'm just going to be very honest. That's one thing I know I applied this year with my Frankston boys. And the conversation was always, hey, this is going to be hard for you to hear. But this is why you're not playing. And you need to go fix this and this. Now, if you need help there, that's why I'm here. I'm going to help you. I'm going to stay on top of you at practice. And I can give you some extra stuff away from the game. If you don't go work on that, if you don't make the change, I won't make the change. And it was really awesome to see some of those athletes throughout the year take it on board and make the change. And guess what? Their court time started to change as well. So that's probably the big one, is even court time young, get their enjoyment. They should be playing. You know, and under 12s. Just if you ain't winning Met 2, it's not going to be the end of your career. But if those kids go on from you and get better, I think that tells a better story of you as a coach, where they go on from you. So give even court time. Give them all a chance. Make sure it's enjoyable as they get older. Yeah, I think it's all context. What division, where are you playing? How important it is to win? Like, I'm not going to go tell – I was going to go tell my NBL1 coach, Andrew Harms, like, hey, mate, even court time. No, his job's to go win. And it's up to the players if they want the court time, what are they doing to go get it?
Yep. No different to you guys. I think I stole it from Jared Hillier. First three quarters of the game will be equal court time for everyone. Last quarter of the game, I'll sub whoever I want to sub to try and get a win. Like, that's – I don't have any problem with that personally. Provided you've explained that to the parents at the start of the season. So there's no, like, what the hell is this guy doing? Like, why is he taking... And, you know, there's a lot of context around that, like foul trouble, injuries, those kinds of things too, obviously play a little bit of a part. But, yeah, around about that under-16s, I think that's when you start having more defined roles, which matter for everyone. So, but again, I think the more you can talk about that, the better with the athletes and give them something to go on, like you're talking about with that, Ash. It's... you know, give them a little bit of a feedback as to what can change and what they can do to make it change. I think it's important too.
Absolutely.
That wraps us up for part one of the mailbag. We'll jump in with part two next week. So appreciate your time, both of you. Ash, this is your final podcast. We'll call it under the BV banner more than anything else. But when people found out that you were winding up at Basketball Victoria, the question I got the most is, what's going to happen to the podcast? Ash is the shining beacon of this thing. Will it continue without him? And it will. Like, it's despite Ash moving on, it will. And we did have a number of people send in some messages of support, which we'll play for you now, Ash.
Congratulations, Ash, on your new coaching role at the Centre of Excellence. You'll do a great job there. It's always been a pleasure working with you with teams here in Victoria, and our SUP lessons will have to be put on hold till Christmas time. Congratulations again. Well done.
I look like an idiot.
Hey, Ash, it's the Guru speaking here. Just giving you a quick shout out as you head up to Canberra to take on your new appointment at the Centre of Excellence. I know the athletes up there will be in good hands with your coaching expertise, and you'll be a great assistant to Coach McKinley up there. I've enjoyed the time. I've got to know you through the BV High Performance program with the Vic Metro teams, and you'll certainly be a miss down here. But as I said before, I wish you all the best up in Canberra, and I hope to catch up with you around the traps at some time.
Get around me.
Yeah, g'day mate, it's Mott's here. Just wanted to wish you all the best up in Canberra. Just a quick message to obviously let you know we're all going to miss you. Going to miss, you know, hanging out and eating beers and talking shit and having a good laugh. You know, you've been a great friend over the last couple of years, and I've really enjoyed getting to know you, and we'll miss you heaps, mate, when you head up there. But certainly look forward to catching up when we get back up to Canberra or you get back down to Melbourne, mate. But all the best. Yeah, I'm sure you'll have a cracking time up there. It'll suit you down to the ground. Thanks, mate. See ya.
We don't need my business out there like that.
Congratulations, Ash. Well deserved. Cannot wait to see the awesome impact you'll have on our talented green and gold athletes and coaches up at the COE. Thanks so much for all you did for Basketball Victoria. You truly are one of the most passionate people to come through the pathway and to hold the high performance coach position. Wishing you nothing but the best. Can't wait to keep working with you. See you in Canberra soon.
Gotta give effort, Robbie. Gotta give effort.
G'day, Ash. It's Jack Fleming here, mate. Congratulations on your new role at the COE. Very well deserved. Just wanted to say thanks for all your hard work across the Basketball Victoria community and your role as high performance coach for Vic Metro. We're looking forward to seeing what you do in the future, mate, and we're very lucky to see the benefits of your work for years to come in the Victorian basketball space. Thanks, mate.
My mother always said I had a face for radio.
Ash, Jared Hilly here, mate. Congratulations on your new gig. Happy for you, mate. Sad to see you go. You're certainly an impressive human, mate. No more than your admittability, in particular typing. Never quite seen a keyboard get assaulted by two index fingers quite like the way you do. But all jokes aside, mate, best of luck. You're a caring person. Really appreciate all the time and effort you put into the program, in particular the last 18 months with all those phone calls, checking in on coaches. All the best, and no doubt we'll speak soon, mate. Catch ya.
That is an absolute stitch-up, and someone's going to get spoken to.
Ash, Andrew Harms here from Frankston Basketball. Now, look, before I jump into the whole congratulations side of things, just an update that, yeah, look, the real reason that you left Frankston Basketball and arguably Basketball Victoria hasn't got out, not to the media or to the general basketball community, which is a real positive thing, because I think if they did find out why you left, which was because you lost a wrestling match to me at our pre-season camp down on the beautiful shores of Lake Glenmaggie. And then obviously from there, they would have found out about the letter from your mum, you know, the whole kind of tears and getting really emotional after the loss. And then the restorative that I had to have with you, where I went on record as saying that I would let you win the next time, you know, that stuff you would have carried all the way to the COE. And that would have been a tough one. To be able to kind of circumnavigate. So big tick, mate. We've been able to keep that quiet. No doubt you can have a fresh start up there at the COE. But it is a massive congratulations, mate. I think the opportunity is going to be a really important one for you. You've been building towards this for a few years now and dedicating a lot of time. So it's a great recognition of your efforts. Of your ability to be able to get into different environments and value add, which I think you're going to carry on into the COE. You're going to provide a great experience from both sides of the basketball, from playing at a good level to coaching at a good level, from your college through to your roles in NBL 1 and Youth League. You're going to go in there really confident that you can help be able to chisel some important pathways for athletes that no doubt will go on to represent our country at major tournaments. So we kind of knew at Frankston, we were somewhat renting you for a period of time. Your impact was massive. You really aligned yourself with the group and the culture. You are going to be sorely missed. We can't wait to watch you flourish in that new role and never, ever forget two things. And that is one, you'll always be part of the Frankston Mafia. And two, I'm always an XL in apparel. So keep that stuff coming down to the peninsula because God knows I can always deal with a free T-shirt and some sweats. All right, mate, best of luck. And no doubt we'll be following your progress, all of us at Frankston, with some Ash Arnett flags waving. Good luck, mate.
Broke the budget later on.
Mr. Ashley Arnett, a.k.a. Biscuit. This is where I meant to say how amazing you are. It's been the best to have worked with you and create this program, I think. But I don't want to thank you because in actual fact, you're leaving me to go to something better and bigger. And for that, I will never forgive you. The next time I see you, probably won't be a nice interaction. And I hope that your time at the COE is absolutely awful. Jokes. You're an amazing dude. I love you heaps. It's been a honor, privilege to have worked beside you. I've had a lot of laughs, too many to be honest, and I'm glad I have such a understanding husband who realizes that I speak to my work husband, you, or my former work husband now that we're divorced, more than I do him. Yeah, I really, really will miss you, as I know the athletes will. You've been an amazing part of Basketball Victoria fabric for the last few years, and it will be hard to replace you. Have no fear. I will continue to call you and annoy you, and that will probably happen probably 5 times a day instead of 10 in the last couple of years. So make sure you have your phone on. I expect you to answer the phone every single time. But in all seriousness, have a great experience up at the COE. Those kids will no doubt learn a lot with you, and I hope that you lap it up. The world is your oyster, mate, and I wish you nothing but the best. Take care, Mr. Biscuit.
Happy to wear it.
Hey, shout out to Ash. The fine people at Talking Split want to congratulate you on your new job, as do I. Make sure you bring that Sons in Form mentality with you. And they also want to thank you for all of your hard work and dedication during your time with them. Keep crushing it, man, just like the Suns organization did last year. We're going to do it again this season. And let's just keep our hopes up. Enjoy life, brother. And you already know what time it is. Suns in four!
Lock in here. I am furious, Jared. Furious.
That's very was nice that? Of people, Ash. That was Suns in four guy.
Well, firstly, obviously those were super nice. You caught me by surprise. I don't know what's going on with those edits in between. That was not me for the listeners.
Highlights.
That is obviously Robbie putting that together. But no, can't thank you guys. That was really nice. And just for everyone out there, Jenny has punched me multiple times since I told her the news. And I will be punching Harmsy when I see him next because that is not what happened. But no, obviously going to, you know, Bass Victoria. Victorian stuff has been a huge part of my life, so I'm going to miss it. And for everyone, thank you very much. I look forward to, you know, seeing people in the gyms in the coming years. I'm not gone. I'll be back and forth, but obviously my attention now turns to another program. But I'll be always around and look forward to catching up and chatting with everyone. And again, I can't thank everyone enough for all the support. But the hard work now begins, and I've got to go prove myself and make sure I grind super hard and get up and really improve myself as a coach. So, again, thank you guys. I really appreciate the messages and even the mean ones.
Well, Ash, I wasn't on there, and obviously we've worked fairly closely together for the last couple of years, mainly because I'm on the pod today, so get the opportunity to speak to you. But like when the message came through that you got that job and that you were taking it and you were leaving, we're all so pumped for you, but then all so angry at you at the same time because there's just no one like you. Like the work you do, the way you make people feel, you know, you're always great for a laugh. You're always there to help with, like, if you just need a vent or you want to chat basketball and get like dive deep into X's and O's or whatever it might be, whatever we've needed, you've been there for. And it's going to be a really massive hole to fill with you gone, and we're going to miss you so, so much. But the COE couldn't have picked a better representative from Victoria to go and take that role. So we're all super proud of you. We're going to miss you from the day to day, but no doubt you'll be getting abusive messages from us pretty regularly, and we'll get to see you at AJCs and things like that. So, yeah, best of luck with it all, mate. Hopefully it's everything you want it to be and you get everything from it that you want, and it takes you to the next level that you want to get to in your coaching. So thank you for everything you've done for me personally and for us as a group.
No, thank you, Zoe. I really appreciate it. It's funny. People are going to be over the moon that they're actually going to get a reply back from the new HP coach.
Look,
so that's one bonus.
Personally, I'm wrapped. You're gone. No, I'm very much joking. It goes without saying, but I will say it. Really appreciate the time and effort you put into the podcast as well, Ash. Like, it's always very happy for us to have fun at your expense, which was always appreciated.
Note to whoever replaces Ash, that's you.
Big shoes to fill. Like, that's not easy to do. And look, in fairness, whilst we hang it on Ash a fair bit, a lot of it is just a bit. Like, it's not necessarily we dislike Ash or or Ash is just an absolute mess of a human being or anything like that. He takes it very well and does have some fun with it. And the knowledge he's been able to pass on to coaches within this has been fantastic too. So even I think before you took on the BV job, you were pretty keen to come on the podcast, and that says a lot about your personality and being able to give back to coaches. So that's a really important part of it too. So appreciate your time. Echoing Zoe's sentiments, good luck with it. We do hope we'll have you on the podcast again. Whether you know it or not, we definitely will, because we have like 2 years worth of sound bites we can just splice up to do. I could probably log into your internet banking at this point. Do whatever I need to do. So we'll see how that goes. But we do appreciate your time, mate, and we'll absolutely catch you around the court soon. And hopefully we are back on courts very soon. And I know you'll be chomping at it to get back on next week. So thanks for your time as well. And we do wish you the best of luck moving forward too.
Thank you, mate. You know, you actually got me. I'm actually a bit speechless. It doesn't happen very often, but no, I can't thank everyone enough. It's been, you know, a special couple of years, and I do like to laugh. Most of the time it's at myself, but again, yeah, I just can't. I will miss it. I'll miss everyone involved. Yeah, thank you so much. And Robbie, when I first started, mate, you were there and had my back and helped me out through so many things. So thank you, mate, for everything you've done. And yeah, just again, to everyone out there, I'm struggling for words. I'm not, I guess, the king of English, but it's...
just the king of Clyde. The king of, ironically, this has been the best internet we've ever got from you. Like, it's... like Canberra internet is far superior to Clyde internet, it turns out.
Yeah. No, but again, just thank you so much to everyone. And I just look forward to this new journey and, again, trying to grow as a coach and get better. So thanks, guys. I do really appreciate it.
That does wrap us up for the Mailbag Part 1 podcast. We'll be back with Part 2 next week with Jenny and Coops, we hope, until Coops calls in sick, and then it's going to be Jenny and Zoe. But we'll see how that plays out, and we'll go from there. But, coaches, thanks very much for listening, and we will catch you all next week. Good luck, Ash.
Look, tune in and join the tribe on iTunes and Spotify.